It's an unbelievable story. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it. I just saw it today, and I think I may have seen it in the past. It's an incredible story. Abraham Kreiswirth was the Rav of Antwerp. Abraham Kreiswirth, he was the Rav of Antwerp for many, many, many years. Prior to that, he was in Europe, and he was Rav of a smaller community next to, in Poland. And do you know where he was Rav exactly? Where was he? Was in the Kela in?
From Krakow.
Maybe it was, I don't know if it was Rav there, maybe. But what happened was that as the, I think it was just before the ghetto, the Warsaw ghetto, at one point he was approached by a family who was apparently very wealthy. And they asked him, the situation is getting more tense here in Europe, and with the Nazis in Machshom taking so much more power, and it's much more tension, and it's getting a bit more dangerous. And therefore they said that, listen, I don't know what's going to be. I'm trying to escape. My family is going this way. I'm going that way. And they asked Abraham Kreiswirth, being the Rav, that perhaps I can give you the details of the bank account, because we've got a safe in Switzerland, an account in Switzerland, yeah, in Switzerland. Yeah. And it is a lot, and I can't trust anybody but you, Habakkuk Svirt, and perhaps you're able to just look after the, I don't know if it was a physical key, I don't know if it was a physical key, I think it was a code. These are the details. It's a Swiss bank account, there's so many, hundreds of that, perhaps even a million, a lot of money, and that's the only person I can, if Cholera something happens, these are the details. Chas v'shalom, if anything happens to me or my family, these are the details. Pam Kasvir said, everything will be fine, Mitzvah Hashem, everything will be alright. But yes, of course, I'll do this, I'm happy to take it. And he took the details and with the relevant passwords and codes, etc. Why? A very wise thing for this individual to do indeed, because a lot of people lost all their fortunes that way. But yes, he actually passed on to Pam Kasvir. And yes, unfortunately, what happened was that this person was killed in the war. Not only he was killed, but his close family was killed as well. And after the war, Abraham Kreiswirth was trying to find the closest family member of this Yid. And he tried to locate the closest relative for this Yerusha, because he didn't know that it was an enormous amount of money he was aware of it. And he searched, and he found, unsuccessful, I think wasn't the joint in charge of that? The joint, the Jewish agency was in charge after the war to find people and lost and connect families together. But he tried his very, very best. I know my grandmother for many years was looking for her own family members. They tried for many years. It wasn't as sophisticated as nowadays. Nothing was computerized like nowadays. And it was very literally, they had like these cards and these files and papers, and people used to very literally go through paperwork just to, I think the Red Cross was busy with them as well. And Abraham Kreiswirth was busy, and he had become a Rav of Antwerp by then. He kept on searching and looking because he had those details, which he knew were worth millions of pounds. And he was trying to find people, but no closest relative was to be found. The whole family was wiped out. It took many, many years later. We're going back to this. It was late 1960s. So 1960s from the war. Yeah, war finished 1945. 20 years later, over 20 years later, Abraham Kreiswirth was invited to speak in a function in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. And he was asked to speak. And Abraham Kreiswirth, many tzedakas, many tzedakas organizations, many people approached him, especially in Eretz Yisrael, because he had so many, Antwerp was a very wealthy community in those days, and many millions of dollars went through. He was being given money to distribute to Aniyim, especially in Eretz Yisrael. He had many moisters, he had schools, Kodelim. Literally millions of dollars every year went through of Kreiswirth. And whenever he went to Eretz Yisrael, many poor people approached him. And so it was that he was invited to a dinner, to a function, to speak in Eretz Yisrael, some sort of dinner, some sort of function. He was a little bit too early. And he was in Yerushalayim, and he found himself in the back of Beis Medrash to learn a bit more. Just he had his half an hour spare. It was a bit too early, half an hour spare before he could actually speak. And he was then, he was learning literally next door to where he was going to speak. And he couldn't help but, two rows in front of him, there was a Yid learning who was literally in literally a pauper, who'd torn shoes and torn shirts and torn t- torn jacket, and he was making himself some coffee. And whilst he was going in the back of the shmelch, he approached me and says, "What's Rav Kaisvit?" Asked him, "What's your name?" And he mentioned his name. And he said, "What's your name?" He said, "My name is Rav Kaisvit." And he started talking a little bit. "Are you the Rav of Antwerp?" Yeah, and he started talking a little bit. And then he says, "Can you just remind me your name?" And he said his name. "Can you just remind me?" Rav Kaisvit had a photographic memory and knew family trees and new connections and everything. He was very... And he said, "Your family name..." And he says, "Can you just tell me what's your uncle's name?" "Your uncle." And within a short conversation, it turned out that this person I'd forgotten if it was a nephew, a great nephew of the Nifter, perhaps a great nephew. And finding out, a bit of identification, a bit of research, turns out after a bit of investigation that he was very obviously a Yoresh, and he was a genuine Yoresh, inherited this incredible fortune, which was locked away and hidden away for the last 20, 25 years. This pauper was in actual fact not a pauper, but he was actually a multimillionaire, but he just didn't know anything about it. And after a bit of investigation, he told me, "I've got some news for you. I've got in a locked away safe in..." Because Chaim Kaisvit never forgot that he had this money. He knew that he had the password. He said, "You know, to tell you something, you're actually not as poor as you may think you are. You're actually a Yoresh inheritor of this great uncle of yours. Before the war gave him the details, and there's an enormous amount of money waiting for you in a bank account in Switzerland. And here are the details, and it's all yours." This person obviously couldn't believe it, but it was true, and he was not a young man. But after a bit of a process and a bit of a process, he was able to access that money thanks to Rav Kaisvit, and he liquidated his bank account in Switzerland, and he took it over to Zold, and he was actually, from overnight, he became a very, very, very wealthy man who himself was able to distribute a lot of stock money. And he lived on for another 10, 15 years. To say the story himself, he lived on for another 10, 15 years. He obviously moved from his little flat into a larger, and he was able to marry off his children and grandchildren with a great fortune. Rav Kaisvit himself said the story. And the morale and the message of the story, there's quite a few messages in the story. What Kaisvit took out from the story is that a person may be very wealthy, just doesn't know anything about it. It's about not just good enough to have, but it's about knowing that you have. It's knowing that you have. And he took it in an Elul discussion, and Elul said that, you know, really well, extremely wealthy, there's a huge amount of potential on these days of Elul, Hoshanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, there's an enormous amount that we can tap into. There's so much ruchnis, so much tefillis, we can achieve and reach so much. It's just about knowing that we can actually get there. Like this Oni, he didn't know, he was a very, very rich man for 20 years. He just didn't know that he was very rich. He lived the life of a pauper and a beggar. He said, when he knew about it, suddenly became so rich. He said that for us also, it's about the knowledge and understand that really we've got such a potential. It's about tapping into the potential and reaching out and making the most out of these Heilige Days. That's how Rav Kaisvit. I think there's other things as well. What do you think is other messages of that story, of that true story? I think there's other messages, other lessons as well. Well, I think it's another key message. You know what? What could be another key lesson from that story? Never give up. Never give up, yeah. He probably never thought there'd be, What could be something else?
Never underestimate the importance of having attention to detail when it comes to remembering things. And
yeah, that sometimes a little detail can change.
You might never know when a particular obscure detail, you might think there's no point remembering that, might suddenly become really important.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's quite fascinating also how Kaisvit, he never gave up. And for 20 years, he still had in the back of his mind, he had that person's details. He had the password and the details he still had with him, yeah. But I think it's also something else as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Sefer Maspik, Lev Dasher, Bavon Ben Arambam, he writes about it, that, you know, there is a person that can be very, very rich, but he doesn't know anything about his wealth. So what does he have from his wealth? It's meaningless to him if he doesn't know anything about it. And similarly, there could be somebody who thinks that he's very, very rich, but he doesn't know about it. He speaks about somebody who's got a treasure chest hidden away, and he lives a life of poverty because he just wants to save the money for future years. And he keeps the treasure chest under a tree far away, hidden away. And there's millions there, millions. But he keeps it away, and he wants to save it, he wants to look after it, he doesn't want to access it. And he lives quite a modest life. He doesn't even know that actually was stolen in the meantime, and the money's not there anymore. So he's got that feeling that he's very wealthy, and he's got that millions on the side, just in case. But in reality, it doesn't exist anymore. It's been stolen. So a lot of it is in our minds, really. That the satisfaction and the happiness of wealth, really something which is just in our minds. Anyway, that's a different point. Okay. All right. Okay. We are up to Simon Tov Yud Ches. We finished in the middle of Sif Dalet yesterday. I didn't complete it. I want to complete it now, as well as Sif Hei and Tov Yud Ches, and moving on. Okay. Let's start again from Simon Tov Yud Ches, Sif Dalet. We're talking about some Kabbalah's Tainis on Rosh Chodesh. So the halach is as follows. Say a person says, I'm going to fast 5 days. Monday, Thursday. 5 days. One of them happens to be on Rosh Chodesh. If he says the Loshen Shvua, we learned yesterday, HaShvua Chol Olav Mitam Isu Koidel. If he uses the Loshen Shvua, an oath, the halach is that he will need to fast because of an Issa Kolit. Since it says 5 days I'm going to be fasting, so 4 of them are not problematic at all. Just the 5th happens to be on Rosh Chodesh. That's an Issa Kolit. It includes, since it includes permissible days to fast, so the fact that the 5th one is not permissible is going to be included, it's going to be Kolit in the Heta. And if I will need to fast on Rosh Chodesh because of Issa Kolit. What happens if he says, I will fast next Monday? And Monday happens to be Rosh Chodesh. And he makes a shvua. The halacha is, nireli shechol olav shvua, kivin she'enu mened rabbonon. Here comes the key discussion. Let me just finish the shulchan aruch. Elo shemedim v'rambam nireli lechoyre, shumudim reise. Okay, there is a key concept which we are learning over here. And that is as follows. If a person makes a shvua, and the shvua is, I will climb up Snowdon next week. And he makes a shvua. Is this shvua chal? It is chal. Why not? A person can make a shvua. What happens if a person makes a shvua and he makes an oath and he promises to him, he makes a shvua and he said, I will be doing something which is an issa deraisa. What would be an example? He makes a shvua, he's going to be transgressing. I'm making sure that I will be something which is awesome in that Torah. I'll be driving on Shabbos, yeah. Or switch on the light. Okay, something switch on the light is man. I like yours. What was it? Driving on Shabbos. That's certainly a deraisa. I'll be driving on Shabbos. I'll be eating something which is absolutely a nevelis and tefes. So will the shvua be chal? Will it work or not? Will the shvua be becoming shvua or not? So the halacha is, since a shvua is a deraisa concept, but it cannot clash against another deraisa, so shvua is considered bottle. It's bottle mevutle. The shvua doesn't exist. You cannot make a shvua against something which is a deraisa. It doesn't work. So if I say I'm going to be eating tomorrow a trefa meat, and I'm using a loshna of a shvua, it's bottle mevutle. It doesn't count. It's as if I didn't say anything. It's cancelled. What happens if it's a darbonon? I'm making a shvur that I'm going to be transgressing a drabonon. So how would that work? What's a drabonon, for instance? An example? Pardon? Mukta. Very good. So I say, okay, I'm going to make a shvur that what I'm doing is I'm going to be touching mukta this Shabbos. So that shvur will actually work because it's only drabonon. So shvur will work on something which is drabonon. Shvur will work. Now, what happens, therefore, if a person makes a shvua, and that's it's a back entrance to a key concept of Hilchos Rosh Chodesh. It's a back entry. What if somebody says, I'm making a shvua that I will be fasting on Rosh Chodesh? A shvua. So will it work or not? Will the shvua be valid shvua, or will it just be cancelled shvua? Why? Oh, so you are tanning and spot on. He said, hold on, it should work because Rosh Chodesh is only a rabbinical concept, and therefore, as I just said now with the Mukta case, since it's only rabbinical, the Shavua works, and he must therefore fast on Rosh Chodesh. Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. Says the Rambam, that it's not true. the concept of Rosh Chodesh is the Reisa. And therefore, if you're making a shvu, you're going to fast on Rosh Chodesh, he's actually making a shvu against the Reisa. And what's the halacha if you're making a shvu against the Reisa? It's potel. Now look at that. What we discussed now is in Mefush Shulchan Aruch. It's beautiful. Im nishpa leis ano is b'Rosh Chodesh. Look at those words of Shulchan Aruch. Im nishpa, if a person made a shvu to fast on Rosh Chodesh, nearly, it appears to me, shechol olav shvu, the shvu will work, will be valid. Kiven she'einoi elam ed rabbonon. Since fasting on Rosh Chodesh is only an issa rabbonon. And therefore, it should be obligated to fast. Elosh medivah Rambam nira, but the Rambam disagrees. And from the words of the Rambam, it would appear, l'choyre shum ed-reisa, that Rosh Chodesh actually has a deraisa aspect to it. And Rabbi Frankel is quite right, because there's psukim in the Torah which tells about the concept of Rosh Chodesh. There's a carbon musaf on Rosh Chodesh. So there is, yes, certainly Rosh Chodesh is a deraisa concept. So it could be that the element of fasting may not be deraisa, but the concept, that's what the Rambam is saying, the concept of Rosh Chodesh is deraisa. And therefore, if a person makes a shvua, I will fast on Rosh Chodesh, it's clashing on a deraisa. And therefore, it's going to be cancelled. Yeah. Oh. So the Rambam, very good. The Rambam must be learning that, let's look at Sifkot and Yud Beis Mishnah Berurah, because that's really what he's addressing. Yud Beis Mishnah Berurah says, Shehu Medraisa, how I know it exists, since it says, Uvemeadeichem, Uveroshechotcheichem, you can see from the Pasuk, it says, Uvemeadeichem, on your festivals, on Yom Tovim, Uveroshechotcheichem, on your Rosh Chodesh, Iskish Rosh Chodesh Lemoyet. You can see there's a solid comparison, a hekesh, between Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov. Ve'alkin, and therefore, in Shvur Cholalov, the Shvur is not valid. Ledidei rak bekol, only if it's a kol, as discussed earlier. Havala shach beredeh, kosav, the shach disagrees in your edeh, tafilu temet b'Rosh Chodesh, m'dei reisah so leisanois, mikomok m'shvur cholalov, kimen she'enu mefurosh b'toyre behedye. And that's exactly the point. Kim Shabbos Yom Tov. So there is very much that discussion. How explicit is it? This aspect of, yes, Rosh Chodesh is m'dei reisah, but how explicit is it? If it's mamash compared like a Yom Tov, then yes, you're not allowed to fast. But how explicit is it that you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh? And that's the machlokes. So Lemaisa, I just want to bring out, I like the Shulchan Aruch very much because it's a back end, it's a key question. We want to know if we should ask ourselves, is Rosh Chodesh Medraisa or not? So the place to look is this Shulchan Aruch over here. Yes, there's an element of the Reisa here. And the proof to that is, if a person makes a shvur that he's going to fast on Rosh Chodesh, machlokes, Rambam, with other Rishonim. So, it's over here, and it's a back entrance to the discussion as to whether Rosh Chodesh Medraisa or not. Yeah, but this is, you're right, but it's true. The Gemara tells us that the Abochat, that you can make, yes, but this is more specific. It's more specific. There's still a difference between a drabon and a deraisa. There's inevitably, it's of a drabon and a kula. You're not going to say that every drabon is a deraisa. So this is a bit more. There's a hekesh. So it's more of a deraisa. There's the general point of Rosh Chodesh, the general nekula. Yeah. But it's still a hekesh. There is. It's compared. It isn't the aspect of the festivity. The yom. There is something yom to think about it. Would be another. Nafkamina would also be if a person, for instance, tachanu to say tachanu Rosh Chodesh. If a person says tachanu Rosh Chodesh, I'm not going to say it's awesome deraisa, but it's certainly closer to an issa deraisa. You know,
that is not itself a deraisa.
Correct.
However, if you want to say that there's deraisa aspects to Rosh Chodesh and that would affect whether you can fast Rosh Chodesh, what about if there's a suffix about whether you said Mevorach al Chodesh? Would you do something?
No, because you wouldn't go suffix, because Mevorach al Chodesh is nothing to do with, it's just a proclamation, an announcement. And that there's no deraisa aspect in that at all. Okay, I think it's a fascinating shtickle Shulchan Aruch, and that leads us to see if, hey, Sifei teaches that Misanah Rosh Chodesh B'Chanukah V'Purim B'Tanas Chaloyim. Going on a Tanas Chaloyim. Here again, this is something which is fairly rare. Although I do know Yidden who do a Tanas Chaloyim. Person has a bad dream. Person has a bad dream, and he feels really shaken about this. Gemara speaks extensively about fasting. Not every bad dream warrants a fast, but some bad dreams do. The Mishnah Berurah elsewhere doesn't recommend it. But there is such a kind of person who has a really bad dream. He's quite shaken about this, quite traumatized about this dream. He wakes up with it. So there is a concept of Tanas Chalom of fasting on that day. That's the only fast that doesn't require a Kabbalah prior to that. Because you just get up, you woke up from this and you fast straight away. Which is, as opposed to all the Tanas Yochid, you always need to be accepting the Tanas on the day before. This you don't, you just fast. What happens to a person who had a really bad dream on Rosh Chodesh, on Chanukah, on Purim? Yes, he should fast. He should fast the Tanas Chalayim, a fast of the Tanas Chalayim. However, since it's wrong to fast on Rosh Chodesh, and it's wrong to fast on Chanukah, and it is wrong to fast on Purim, but he just feels he needs to fast because of that dream. He doesn't want to delay it for the next day. He just wants to fast. And the halacha is, yes, you do fast, but since it's wrong to fast on those days, what are you meant to do? You have to add another tanis. You have to add another tanis, which shows that you're really sincere about this fasting. You're not just doing it because you want to skip this Purim meal. You can't be bothered with this Purim festivity. So you're sincere about it. You're going to fast another.
Is it to bring the schaper on?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That means that there is something about a Tanas Chalom. It helps. Yet Gemara says it helps. And a person can change a potential decree by fasting. Yes, it does help. But it's still wrong to fast on Rosh Chodesh. Still wrong to fast on Chanukah. Still wrong to fast on Purim. So you're going to have to fast another day on top of that. Tzorech lemesev tanes l'sa'anise, which literally means tzorech lemesev. You need to add tanes, a fast day l'sa'anise, to his fast. And the Mishnah Berurah's words. What about Shabbos? What about if a person has a bad dream on Shabbos?
Well, as I said, with regards to times on Shabbos as well, it says Ma'adim, Ma'adechem, Rosh Hashanah. I mean, if you're going to be medayik about it, maybe it's Lachuk and Shabbos, maybe.
Oh, so I hear what you're saying, but Lemaisa, there is... You're right in your diuk, because that pasuk Madechem v'Rosh Chodeshem, he's speaking specifically about Meradim Rosh Chodesh. But Shabbos got different reason. Yeah, that's right. But Mishnah Berurah got Yud Gimel Tanas Chalom Shemutal is Anos Afilu B'Shabbos V'Yom Tov. Tanas Chalom you'd be allowed to fast. Again, normally you don't fast on Shabbos because of the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos. But Tanas Chalom would be permitted to fast on Shabbos. So yes, if a person has a bad dream, he may fast on Shabbos. Tanis l'tanisoy, k'dei l'chaper olav al shebit l'oneg Rosh Chodesh, and you'd have to make up for the fasting which he did on Rosh Chodesh. K'moy le'eltsim l'resh peches l'inin Shabbos. The same would apply on Shabbos. So when he has a bad dream and he fasts on Shabbos, he'd have to add another day afterwards.
He's parted from the mitzvahs of Seder Shabbos and Kiddush.
Yeah. But it's a chet, and therefore he has to make up. It's interesting. I want to say that there is a school of thought, which actually is the Bialocha, tells us that nowadays we shouldn't really fast so much about bad dreams. Why? I think it's such a psychological, such a modern thought, this. It's such an interesting. Never mind that. That's true as well. But it's something much more practical than that. Exactly, our lives. I mean, imagine the life of our grandparents 100 years ago. What were they exposed to in one day? Okay, they saw their wives and their children in their house. Then they saw their cows. And they saw a couple of horse wagons. That was pretty much. Then they saw the mountains and the trees. And they saw, well, if it was a really very busy, very hectic day, they may have seen also it was a market day. Really hectic. That's how much the exposure level they had, yeah? Nowadays, you just walk from your house to shul and you probably encounter more. I'm not even talking about negative exposure. I'm just talking about the kind of things where the advertisements, the noise level, the cars, the busy, the hectic. So much we encounter so much. Just see a couple of, just watch the A41 for 5 minutes and you've seen more than a person 100 years was exposed his whole life. So because of that, this is what the Bialocha says. I'm just rephrasing it, but that's what he said. Therefore, our minds are just going wild and just going to sleep, says the Bialocha, says the Mishnah Berurah, that Obviously, our minds are going to go crazy. Obviously, we're going to have some funny dreams. Obviously, it wouldn't be normal. Our minds go crazy, and therefore, it doesn't necessarily mean when we have a dream, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's much to it. It's probably just because our minds are just like trying to calm down and try to process our lives. And therefore, there's not much need to do a Tehillat Chalom nowadays. Perhaps suggest the Mishnah Berurah. All right, okay. I did want to learn Simin Tov Yutes as well, which is the following halacha. Simin Tov Yutes, if a chol mitzvah lahabos b'sudas shchodesh, it's a mitzvah to increase food on Rosh Chodesh. We can cope with that one. No, we're okay with that. Yeah, when we are happy, we eat more. That's the aside. Mitzvah lahabos b'sudas shchodesh, on the Rosh Chodesh meal, we add food. A boy says, is that what you do? Do you increase on Rosh Chodesh food? Never heard. So start now. Next Rosh Chodesh. Well, yeah. What kids have Rosh Chodesh nash? Rosh Chodesh nash. So what? Okay. So there you go. So I will never forget the happy days in Mir Yeshiva. Who was in Mir? What happened to Rosh Chodesh in Mir? Schnitzel. I don't remember the schnitzels. No. And I also remember clearly that in Mir Yeshiva, I hope they haven't changed it. Do you know it used to be this badi, they were called the badi, the yogurts, the vanilla yogurts, and that's as well. Oh. And these were those chodesh treats. Those chodesh, you know, these vanilla chocolate.
Like Swiss yogurts, were they?
Pardon?
They weren't like Swiss yogurts.
So these were the treats, those chodesh treats. And this is in line with the Shulchan Aruch. Yes, in line with the, you have to add a bit. So you should add a bit of food on those chodesh. It doesn't have to be an additional meal, but it does need to be of an extra, a bit of an extra. Yes, the nash is good. Anything that is good, you. Rabbi Yosselik, are we happy to introduce this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known about it before, my dad.
And he says, the Mishnah Berurah in Sefkotn Aleph adds the following medrash. I'm going three lines into the Mishnah Berurah. Koswa poiskim b'sham medrash psikta. He quotes a medrash. Kol mezonos av shel adam. All the panos, the mezonos, the food of a person. Ktsuvim loy meroish hashana. At Rosh Hashana are ktsuvim. Are written, are preset, preordained from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. Chutz, excluded. We better daven on Rosh Hashanah. Well, everything is preset on Rosh Hashanah in 2 weeks' time. Everything is preset, predecided. Excluding. Chutz, Mashem Oitzim, Shabbos, Yom Tovim. All the expenses, Shabbos and Yom Tov expenses. Just go for it. That extra drink, that extra food, that extra thing. Just go for it because it's not included in the Cheshbon. It's like a different, it's a different account. Shabbos food, Yom Tov food, and Rosh Chodesh food is also part of that extra account for Chol HaMoed and Chol HaMoed. And now the final one is a very controversial one. And what it means is what the children bring to their rabbis, to their teachers, to their schools. In Moisif and Loi, if you add, you get further blessings. But if you decrease what you really meant to give on that account, you are you're going to lose out. Cholila from that. There is a discussion. What does it mean? What the food? What the kids bring to the rabbis? What is he referring to?
Envelopes.
Oh. So there's a discussion. It could either mean school fees. Yes, it may mean school fees, or it means a bit of extra donations for the rabbis. Yes. Yeah, that's right. So either means it could be on Rosh Chodesh. The Bach says that on Rosh Chodesh, you bring something nice for the rabbis on Rosh Chodesh. And the Bach says you shouldn't change the minik. But if it could mean you can choose your pshat and your malach you want to take. Rabbi, we covered this evening the following halachas. We discussed that there is a discussion as to whether a person makes a shvua that he's going to fast on Rosh Chodesh. Does he fast on Rosh Chodesh, yes or no? And this is dependent on the discussion as to whether Rosh Chodesh is Madereisa or not. We moved on and discussed that a person who does fast on Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah and Purim, Etanes Chaloim, it's fine to do so as long as he adds a fast afterwards. On the back of that, he adds another fast day. And finally, we learned the key halacha that a person should increase food on Rosh Chodesh. And that's a good one to keep. Good. Okay, we'll start Tov Ches tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. Tov Chof tomorrow, yeah.